On To The Point, we try to make sense of the policy debates and the political sideshows on the campaign trail.
You have this kind of asymmetrical warfare coming from a guy who's great at a soundbite, lousy at an answer.
So are you looking for your own billionaire?
Nope. No, I don't want my own billionaire. I'm going to raise the vast majority of the money.
Brace yourself, America, for what?
King Trump.
I'm Warren Olney. To The Point has you covered for the 2016 campaign. Find the To The Point podcast on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call a thing
but oh.
The shooting of two black men by police. Then, the shooting of a dozen officers in Dallas as the streets there were thronged by a protest march killing five. We're devoting the program to the loss of life and the swift and emotional reaction from every quarter. Welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Ray Suarez. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left is Dahlia Lithwick, senior editor at Slate. And our special guest is Kelly Goff, columnist for The Daily Beast and host of the WNYC series Political Party with Kelly Goff. Welcome to you all. Kelly Goff, what are we to make of all of this? Not only the events themselves, but the reaction to them.
Well, it's obviously not possible to be an American and not be heartbroken about what we've seen become of our country in the last 72 hours. The loss of the lives of the two black men killed by police officers and then compounded by the shooting of officers allegedly targeted because of their race as well. It just does not speak to the best of America and who I believe we really are as a country. I believe all of the good people I know of different races and different professions tell me that this does not represent who America really is. But I also feel that we're at a breaking point. You know, I've written quite a bit about this, the fact that if you look back throughout history, whether it was the Civil War or whether it was the Civil Rights Movement at its peak, that things always get much, much, much worse before they get better, particularly when we're on the verge of a breakthrough. And so what I see happening is as tragic and terrible and heartbreaking as all of this is, and it certainly is, it also tells me that we're on the verge of a breakthrough because we've seen this type of behavior happen before, Ray. I mean, just as a reminder, the way we got a first African-American president is because we went through all of the horrible stuff that preceded it, right? So the Ku Klux Klan didn't form until after slaves were freed, right? Because they saw the country changing. They didn't like how it was changing, so they responded. Churches weren't bombed until after the Civil Rights Movement really started gaining traction because people didn't like the way the country was moving. So I think a lot of this tension speaks to the fact that we are becoming the America we're meant to be, which is America in which mixed race families are the fastest growing demographic in the country. But we're going through some really, really ugly, painful growing pains right now, and we just have to get through them.
Rich, you buy that social change like passing a gallstone, where you have to have a lot of pain before you get the relief?
Well, I tend to be optimistic about race relations in this country as a general matter. And I think these shootings, it's correct. It's a good thing that there's been more attention to them. I think we've learned through police cameras and social media videos that police will lie. Also, I think there's always important to have perspective that in most of these cases, what we're talking about is occasionally it's criminal acts by the cops and acts of murder. Usually it's tragic misunderstandings that are completely blown out of proportion and made into a false narrative about systemic police racism or the targeting of black people. And I really don't think that vitriolic rhetoric is at all helpful. I'm always one to blame the criminals for their crime, so I don't want to peg what happened to Dallas on Black Lives Matter, but it's actually not a good thing to have a public discourse based on vitriolic dishonesty the way we've seen since Ferguson. And Ferguson itself was based on a lie. The whole hands up, don't shoot narrative was false from the beginning, and it's been at the core of the Black Lives movement from the beginning, and some journalists and activists have been honest enough to admit that that's not what happened at Ferguson, but many others haven't been.
Can I just do a fact correction, though, on one thing, though, that Rich said, which is that multiple government investigations have found that there actually is systemic racism and targeting in how Black people are pulled over by the police, Rich. So just to clarify what you just said, you can make the case that there's not systemic intentional, we're going to go out and shoot Black men today. But in terms of who they're pulling over and stopping, every piece of evidence has shown that they do actually target Black people.
In fact, well, there's a study out this week on policing that shows 3.5 times more likely to have escalating encounters with the police are Black men over white men. Now, 3.5 times is enough of a multiplier that you can't just ignore it or write it up to sample error or something.
And I would just add to that, it's not just the orders of magnitude that you're talking about. That's important, Ray, but I think it's also, you know, undergirding these claims of structural racism isn't just, you know, who stopped and why are they stopped and are they stopped for a broken taillight and how quickly it becomes lethal. But I think really big systemic questions about how police departments are financing themselves, about how whole towns like Ferguson are, you know, predicated on profiting from warrants for trivial offenses. I mean, I think this is a systemic problem, not insofar as cops necessarily hate Black people. I think it's a systemic problem insofar as if you are poor and you're a minority, you are really cannon fodder for a system that is not as much about policing, I think, as it is about raising revenue in some jurisdictions.
But Dahlia, Rich also made the point that there's a risk in overreading any one incident and trying to put it into harness to serve too many agendas. Sometimes these things are not as clear and clean cut as they first appear.
That's actually worse. And let me tell you why it's worse. Because part of what you and Rich just said is actually true and far scarier if you're a person of color, as I am, which is that, as the Harvard study found, that the reaction when you see a Black face on the screen, and I think most of you will know which study I'm talking about, where they, you know, tested to see how quickly someone reacts to an image on a screen and as if they had a gun. And the way that people react more quickly to a Black face leaves no room for error when a real life gun is involved. So what does that mean? And why did I say that what we're all talking about is actually scarier? Is that, yes, it's actually true. Most white cops are not going out there saying, I think I'm going to shoot a Black guy today. What is happening is they're more fearful of Black men. And so when a Black guy like Philando Castile says, I'm going for my wallet, if he had been white and wearing a suit and tie, the likelihood is the officer would have heard wallet and not reacted the way that he did. Instead, this white officer, who I doubt left his home and said, I want to go hunt a Black guy today, reacted with pulling a trigger. That's why I'm saying it's scarier, because it's a much deeper issue than simply saying, well, I don't think all white cops hate Black men. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is the ones who don't still have a problem with seeing Black men as more violent than the rest of the population and are reacting accordingly.
Dahlia, I want to make sure you get in here. One surprise was how quickly Governor Mark Dayton of Minnesota named race as a factor in the shooting of Philando Castile.
Well, I think it's because it is a factor, and I don't think anybody here has suggested it's not a factor. And I think, you know, Rich is completely right to say that we can't take these multifactorial problems and drain out one factor and say this is exclusively about race. And I would just tag on to what Kelly said. You know, the other factor in this is that he had a gun, and he said, I have a gun. And his girlfriend allegedly said, and he has a permit. He has a concealed carry permit. So I think this is massively exacerbated, not just by race, but by the fact that we have utterly different standards in this country for policing African Americans who have guns and for policing white folks who have guns. And, you know, I just think it's really important to understand that if the standard for police reaction in one of these hair trigger situations where you have to make a quick decision, as happened here, the standard is he reasonably fearful? And it is entirely reasonable, in my view, to be fearful of anyone who says, I have a gun. And so I just think we need to be really thinking, in addition to this race question, which is so freighted in and of itself, what does it mean to be policing in a nation with increasingly liberal gun laws that make it very likely for cops who have to make a split-second determination about whether their lives are in danger. It's always going to seem reasonable to shoot first and ask questions later. And if we don't have the conversation about how policing is affected and impacted by the proliferation of guns in this country, then we are not having the kind of multifactorial conversation we need to have.
Rich Lowry?
Yeah, if I could just circle back on a couple things. One, Kelly's caveat that the officer in Minnesota didn't go out hunting a black guy is a caveat that enormous elements of Black Lives Matter will not make, and it's an extremely important one. Two, we have the horrifying and heart-wrenching video of the aftermath of that shooting, which you have to have a heart of stone not to be heartbroken over. But we don't have video of what actually happened at the time of the shooting. The cop may have made an innocent mistake. He may have acted in a blameworthy manner in actually a criminal matter. But I think there's one thing we've learned from Ferguson to the Freddie Gray case in Baltimore.
And Walter
Let's
Scott.
Wait and see the facts. Sometimes the cop just shoots someone in the back and there's nothing else to it and he should go to jail. But oftentimes there's more to it. So I think if there's one lesson we should learn, just wait. Don't make big pronouncements in the heat of the moment and see as the facts come out. Now, when we're talking about Ferguson, it's definitely true that one thing that came out from Ferguson is that Ferguson and other jurisdictions in that area were involved in parasitic traffic stops that did overwhelmingly victimize poor and powerless people. And that's just a wrong way for government to act. But black-run jurisdictions in the area did it as well. So it's wrong on the face of it. It's not necessarily a racist thing. And then finally, on all these studies, you just and all the disproportionate figures you hear about police interactions with black men and et cetera, you always have to include, unfortunately, just as a matter of context, the higher rates of offending among black men, which is no one likes to talk about it because it's very uncomfortable, but it's a fact.
But I'm happy to talk about it because it's, again, not actually being portrayed factually accurate. The New Jersey State Trooper case, Rich, found that they were racial profiling. There wasn't like any other fancy dressing up of it. That's a very famous case that anyone is welcome to look up. So that there was systemic racism in how state troopers were targeting African-American drivers in New Jersey. That's number one. Number two, can we all go back and talk about stop and frisk, which the research showed was actually not being carried out even the way that you are portraying it, which is, yes, to your point, African-American men, particularly in certain communities, are arrested at disproportionate rate, convicted at disproportionate rates for specific crimes. That is not how stop and frisk was being executed. There was just a blanket system in which they were going after anyone who was brown or black and stopping them, regardless of what neighborhood they were in, regardless of what community they were in. It wasn't profiling, as you're talking about in terms of criminal profiling, it was specific racial profiling. And the fact that they were arresting people, and what was it, 90% of the people, there was nothing, they weren't finding anything on them, showed that there was something that they were doing that was not right. So that's, I just want to make sure that we stop buying into this myth that, well, because the numbers of African Americans, you're right, but that goes back to the issues of class, poverty, and crime. And if they were targeting it that way, where they said there were specific, you know, public housing projects where they were flooding those, and that's how they were doing their arrests, then a case could be made that at least there was some sort of rhyme or reason that went beyond simply they're brown, they must be guilty of something, which is how it was being carried out. And then people wonder why African Americans feel targeted.
Let us know what you think about the terrible shootings in Texas, Louisiana, and Minnesota at kcrw.com/LRC, our Facebook page, or our Twitter account, at LRCKCRW. Up ahead, more on police killings, race, and the political campaign. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Listen to Left, Right, and Center on demand from KCRW's smartphone apps, now for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And share your thoughts on today's show at kcrw.com/LRC.
This podcast is produced by nonprofit radio station KCRW. Support the podcasts you enjoy by donating at kcrw.com/join.
We're back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm your guest host, Ray Suarez. On the right is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. On the left, Dahlia Lithwick of Slate.com. And Kelly Goff of The Daily Beast and WNYC is also with us. We're devoting the whole program this time to the terrible shootings in Texas, Minnesota, and Louisiana. These killings and the firestorm that followed don't come at an otherwise orderly or placid time in our politics. The stage is set for a bitter, personal, no-holds-barred presidential season. How could the events of the week transform that conversation? Donald Trump was complaining about alleged anti-Semitic tweets. Hillary Clinton was fighting off damning aspects of the FBI report. And then these things intervened, totally sweeping those matters off the front page. Dahlia Lithwick?
Yeah, it's been a race to the bottom, I think, when you keep thinking there's no cellar to this entire election, and then there's a sub-basement. And this was a very dispiriting week on all counts, I think, in the starkest sense. Entire dust-up about Trump and the arguably anti-Semitic tweet and his unwillingness to back down in the face of accusations that it was inappropriate, his, in fact, doubling down has really, I think, terrified a lot of people who think he has absolutely no control over his messaging and that this is entirely a campaign that is just run by id. And the Comey statements about Hillary Clinton are dispiriting, to say the least, and for folks who are struggling with whether she walks right up to the line in her conduct, I think that it's certainly she's very happy probably not to have been found to have done anything illegal, but nobody wants to be called extremely careless by Jim Comey. And so I just think it was, in a weird way, a week that has reinforced everything that everybody has come to hate about the conversation in this election.
Will the shootings, Rich, cast a shadow over the presidential debate in the coming weeks?
It's another one of these things like the Orlando terror attack that you would think in the abstract would help Trump, you know, as the candidate of law and order. Seeing police officers shot down in cold blood like that in a way we haven't experienced in decades and decades, if ever, would help him, except the commander-in-chief test has a lot to do with steadiness, and he has just shown no ability to project steadiness. And no matter how much they briefly rein him in or get him in front of a teleprompter, he's still at a rally or an interview creating unnecessary controversies about him, where his entire electoral prospects really depend on making the election about Hillary Clinton and about a status quo that a lot of people think is corrupt and unsatisfactory. And to the extent the conversation continues to be about Jewish stars and Donald Trump tweets, and Trump himself feeds and stokes that, he's undermining his own chances.
Kelly Goff, you don't want to have a conversation with your family about fire prevention when the house is on fire. Does this actually put the goal of having some sort of productive conversation about these matters almost further out of reach because of the frantic nature of the reaction and the terrible events themselves?
I actually feel like perhaps this might be one of those significant turning points the last few days, and hopefully a turning point for the positive, Ray, in that I think it's very easy for people to think it's someone else's problem, right? So, oh, I may be African American, but you know, I've not committed a crime. I don't have to worry about it. Oh, okay. You know, I'm not African American, so I don't have to worry about the topic at all. Or oh, you know, everyone has kind of a way that they can distance themselves. And I think the killing of Philando Castile, and then now the deaths of these officers, have 100% confirmed that this issue of people being fearful of the police, and that actually reinforcing the safety of not just motorists and people who might be pulled over by the police, but also the police officers themselves now, I think it reinforces that it's an American problem. And so my hope is that now people who maybe didn't feel that they needed to weigh in or help try to find a solution for why so many communities have a measure of distrust of the police will now feel compelled to do so. I mean, with all due respect, I think that there are people now talking about this issue and engaged in this issue after this week that probably weren't a week ago. And so as terrible as these deaths are, I'm hoping something positive will come from it and that at least more people will feel engaged. I'm already sensing that on social media, for the record. I mean, I have friends on Facebook who don't like talking politics, but who are saying, what can we all do to try to change things? So I hope that we all hang on to that.
I found the reaction to the president's address from Warsaw in some ways puzzling. It was careful, really careful, painfully careful, measured, on the other hand, but also giving a clear nod from the numbers to the fact that there is disproportionate prejudicial punishment of black and brown men. We saw the former congressman from Illinois, Joe Walsh, tweeting out that, in fact, this is war, and Obama has to be careful, and real America is going to fight back. Rich Lowry, it didn't seem like much of a throwing down of the gauntlet to quote-unquote real America to hear the president deplore the shooting of these men before the Dallas incident.
Yeah, of course. Well, that reaction is ridiculous and over the top. I don't know why, though, President Obama feels compelled to comment on every other one of these police-involved shootings before we know the facts. It's one thing for all of us who are on Twitter and social media and on the radio to speculate and be right on top of the day's news. It's not necessarily the role of the President of the United States. And horrible though Dallas was, I think a little perspective is in order. Since the mid-1990s, really, this country has experienced an extraordinary period of social and civil peace compared to what is experienced. And you don't have to go back to the Civil War. You go back to the 60s, where there are hundreds of political bombings in this country when cities were burning to the ground. You look at the Rodney King riot and compare it to what happened in Ferguson. There's just no comparison whatsoever. So I think a little bit of what's going on is the 24-hour media and the social media is exaggerating everything that happens.
I want to get Dahlia Lithwick's reaction to your idea that the president was out of turn when speaking before all the facts were in.
No, I don't think he's out of turn. I think that this is giving voice to really an anguished outcry from black and brown Americans who are really saying this is persistent. Two in 2 days is insane. So I think that for the president to give voice to it is not problematic. I would say, Ray, and I think this is important, I agree completely with Rich that these knee-jerk first reactions, the first thing we were hearing was, it's ISIS, in Dallas. I mean, we cannot find a narrative that's convenient and just jump on it and, tweet it until we're proven wrong. That's clearly a stupid way to have civil discourse. But I do think that it's important that some of these themes that Kelly's talking about, the way of life for people in communities who don't have casual, nice encounters with the police because any traffic stop feels like it could be lethal. I think giving voice to that is really important. And I would just say one thing further. I think that one of the problems with the 24-hour media and the, endless Twitter conversation about whose fault it is that we have gone the next step and started blaming anyone who gives voice to anything for the violence that comes after. So the suggestion that Black Lives Matter is somehow responsible for what happened in Dallas is just one more iteration of blaming people for saying that which is true. So I just think we have to be very, very careful.
Well, I was just going to say, but I also think part of that is because people don't like to look in the mirror, right? It's much easier to point the finger and say, this problem wouldn't exist if this person or this group would do X, Y, Z, right? Like if you can point the finger at a particular group, you don't have to look at your own position on gun control. Hello, Texas, where I'm from. If you can point the finger at a particular group, you don't have to talk about the urban violence that's plaguing our communities outside of police officers. If you can point the finger, I think that's part of what the convenience of social media has made it possible for people to do. And that is in part what President Obama is reacting to. Because the truth is, Rich, if he had said no comment, that would have been a news story that would have potentially overshadowed any good that his administration could do to try to address the issue. And part of that is because he's black. He gets asked about race and racial topics much more than any white president ever has. And I kind of think it's one of those rock and a hard place kind of things because they know, rightly so, that if he had not commented or said, we're not going to comment on every case, people would say, oh, so you think Philando Castile is just any case and you don't want to comment on it. So
It doesn't seem so outrageous for President of the United States to say this is something, investigation that's still underway. He doesn't have to get out in front of it just because people are on Twitter talking about it. You know, should he be out complaining about the Ferguson effect when people are still debating whether the Ferguson effect even exists? Although actually there is a very respected criminal researcher whose work prior to this point has been used to debunk the Ferguson effect, who now says that it may be real. And there's a reason that 10 major cities have seen a 33% increase in homicide recently, which, again, is something that is almost never talked about. People just want to shut down the conversation because it's too uncomfortable.
I write about urban violence and the fact that, I mean, I think I've talked about it on this show, and the fact that it actually gets about a
I didn't say you didn't. I make the exception for you.
Well,
I mean, you make all the appropriate caveats, but there's been a major effort to just debunk and not want to hear this because it might show a downside to the agitation against the police, one. And two, it also highlights the fact that a lot of people, you know, you're an exception, don't want to talk about, which is the main threat to black men in our cities, is other black men.
I don't think it's an either or, and I actually don't think I'm an exception. I think I might be an exception to the stories the media covers, which goes back to, again, to a lack of media responsibility, because most shows and most outlets, you know, want to have extremist shout fest instead of actually talking to people about real solutions. But going back to the president, I think that when you look at the numbers and you look at what he spent his administration talking about, there are plenty of gay Americans he went on the record and went straight to bat for the moment he got into office. I think there are a lot of African Americans who feel that his community didn't get the same attention. I think it's hard to argue with that when you look at what he made priorities in terms of policies. And I think that's why you're seeing him in part talk about some of this stuff more now, Rich, now that he's on his way out the door.
We've reached that time once again for our famed left, right, and center rants featuring pet peeves from across the political spectrum. I know you have all prepared really niggling rants. Rich Lowry, what's yours?
My niggling rant has to do with James Comey falling victim to the John Roberts disease, which is that when the facts and logic put you in a place where you have to make a really momentous decision that's going to have a major effect on the political process, you come up short. And James Comey, in his statement that no reasonable prosecutor would pursue the case against Hillary Clinton, is in effect nullifying the statute in question, which doesn't require intent. It just requires gross negligence, or as James Comey calls it, extreme carelessness.
Dahlia Lithwick?
I think at moments like this one, and I do think Kelly's right, we are at this inflection moment in this country. People are, I think, have the sense across the spectrum that it feels like 1968. It feels like we are staring into an abyss and that we could take two steps wrong and become unrecognizable to ourselves. Boy, do I hate that the Joe Walshes of the world get all our attention the next day. I think that this conversation can be sanely had by all the thoughtful people in the center who can agree on basic principles like Black Lives Do Matter and Police Lives Do Matter, and that paying this endless, needless attention to the weirdest and worst circus barkers among us is just distracting, and I think in this particular moment, really dangerous.
Kelly Goff, what's on your mind?
I want to give a shout out to Nakia Jones, who's an African-American female police officer who talked about how brokenhearted and shamed she was by police officers who really don't live up to the motto to protect and serve. And I just want to say that there are when we talk about the police and we talk about communities of color, we forget that there are plenty of people out there who live in the intersections of those two worlds, and those are police officers of color. And I want to thank them for their service, and I want to also pay respect to the difficult line they're walking now, but to say I want them to know that they're appreciated. And we appreciate all of the good police officers out there in the world who are here to protect and serve whatever race they may be.
That's all we have time for today. Thanks to Rich Lowry, Dahlia Lithwick, and Kelly Goff. Laura Dine Million produced today's program. Our technical director is J.C. Swadek. Ashleen Knutson is our production assistant. I'm Ray Suarez. Thanks for joining us. Tune in next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
Download the podcast from KCRW.com or from iTunes and share your comments at KCRW.com/LRC. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by KCRW.